This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports. The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. I have a curious case regarding a young cross-country runner from Texas A&M, which I hope I can get to later on in the hour. But first up, well, look, we're in the middle of October. Lots of things happening in the world of sports, baseball playoffs and the upcoming World Series, NFL, college football, the start of the NBA and NHL seasons. But in spite of all the great goings-on in those sports, I thought we should spend a little time this morning talking about soccer. And of course, I'm talking about the U.S. men's team not qualifying for the World Cup. Their 2-1 loss to Trinidad and Tobago last week sent shockwaves throughout the U.S. soccer world. And of course, by not qualifying, this means that the top soccer administrators here in the U.S. now have an astounding 5 long years to figure out what we're doing wrong with our soccer program. In short, we apparently just don't produce enough talented players out of our youth and our travel programs. Now look, even the most diehard soccer fans in Trinidad and Tobago thought they would lose. I mean, if you saw some of the replays of the games, hardly anyone showed up to watch the game against the United States. They were convinced that they weren't going to win. And with the solitary exception of Christian Pulisic, most of the commentary that I've been reading about the U.S. soccer team is that it has too many older players, too many veterans, and more importantly, very few young rising stars like Pulisic. So I want to talk about this for a little while this morning, and I'll open the phone lines right away because this is curious. Online, of course, here our number of the Fan is 1-877-337-6666. And here's what so many of us just don't understand. I mean, it seemed by all accounts that the men's soccer program was making substantial progress over the last couple of decades. But if that's true, how could they stumble so badly in these qualifying rounds? How come we're not more dominant? Yes, I know that in most countries around the world, soccer is their top national sport. Of course I know that. But that being said, Americans have been focused on soccer big time since at least the 1980s, and yet we're still trying to find our way with the men's game. We talk all the time on the show about the U.S. Soccer Federation, how they are convinced that the only way to get soccer kids to improve is for them to basically walk away from their high school varsity teams and to play solely on a federation team. But if you look at the bottom line, is that approach really working? I mean, yeah, Pulisic is a star, but who else? So my question is this. Has the time come to go back and totally rethink about what's not working? I mean, as mentioned, we have 5 years now to reevaluate before the American team can try and requalify for the next World Cup. And here's the bottom line. How is it possible that we are the wealthiest and most powerful country in the world, and yet we still can't figure out how to produce top male soccer players? Now, please, don't tell me it's because soccer is new to Americans. That may have been an excuse some years ago, but it doesn't work anymore. The American men's team has made it to the World Cup playoffs pretty consistently since the 1980s and is now just firing or having Coach Arena resign or firing the people in charge of the program. Does that make for a big change? I don't know. I'm curious to see what you think. Again, 1-877-337-66. Let's start our conversation this morning. Let's go to Dan, who's calling in from the Bronx. Dan, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Good morning, Rick. I met you last week at the Catholic High School Athletic Association conference.
Oh, out at St. Francis Prep. Yes, Dan.
Yes. I came up with you to speak with you afterwards. Thank you very much for your show.
Well, thank you, Dan. Thank you for coming by and saying hello that evening.
All right. I coach high school soccer right now, and the quality of play in high school is vastly inferior to, like, the club.
Mm-hmm.
I know that paper play is a, it's a kind of a hot topic right now, and does it limit access to more players? But in the high school game, it seems like it's more results-driven and not as focused on player development.
Mm-hmm.
The ball will be deep either with the keeper or with one of the back four, and they'll hoof it long trying for a breakaway with the striker, and it just cuts out the whole midfield. So kids aren't learning to kind of play with the ball. So I think there's a big chasm between these development academies or club teams where I think they're teaching the game better, and in the high school where it's, you might want to find like a fast striker who can run onto a long through ball, and you're not really teaching the kids how to play.
Dan, and I think you just sort of nailed the concern and the issue here is that, of course, the traditional high school varsity programs are still out there. They're still thriving. But we've seen, of course, in the last generation or so that this migration of the so-called more talented players to going on to the travel programs, federation teams, whatever it might be, where obviously that's more, I believe, more of emphasis upon individual play as opposed to team play. And I think that's where we have to sort of reevaluate what's the best approach here. Is there a way that both high school and travel can coexist, or they should be melded, or there should be a whole new sort of approach entirely?
Right. And I know I've listened to the show for years, and I know it's been a topic like, kids are going to look back and they're going to remember playing for their high school.
Yes.
More than for like an AAU program for baseball or basketball. Like the identity is with the school.
Right.
But if kids want to really learn how to play football really well, they're going to have to, right now that game does not exist in the high schools for the most part, in what I've seen in my coaching experience. And I think it's up to us who are coaches, even if we're underpaid or even volunteers. There's lots of free information out there from U.S. Soccer about how to develop the system of play that they want to see in the United States,
mm-hmm.
Including, drills and exercises for the midfield, how to develop players. And I think that has to be a bigger focus of high school sports, player development, rather than just being solely focused on the results, because that's where kids who maybe aren't able to pay for an expensive club team, which could be like $6,000 a year, they're going to be able to play for their high school for, maybe the cost of a uniform or some, for athletic fee. And those kids need to learn how to play football and not have this big chasm between the quality of play in the travel programs and in the high school program.
Well, Dan, as I said, you touched on a lot of the issues here. And, first, for example, the way it's set up now, and I know some of these travel programs say they offer scholarships and so on and so forth, but the fact is, most kids who want to play on an elite travel team in soccer, it's going to cost several thousand dollars. And for most families, that's a huge expense, particularly because there's no guarantee there's going to be a payoff with a college scholarship. And the second part, of course, is the fact that most kids like to play with their buddies from school and play on their high school team. That's the concern. And, of course, the third thing is, people look at, look at the success they have in South America or in Europe, where most high schools don't offer varsity teams. They just say if you're good in a particular sport, you start playing on a club team when you're very young. It has nothing to do with the school. So I understand there's a concern these days when it comes to, having to overcome this tradition of playing for a high school team, because in Europe or South America, they don't have that problem. I mean, if you're a talented soccer player in Spain or in Brazil or in Italy, you're playing for a club team independent of your school from the time you're 6, 7, 8 years old. That mentality doesn't exist here in the States, and that is a concern.
Thanks, Rick.
Thanks for the call, Dan. Appreciate your thoughts. Let's go quickly. Let's go to Jim in Wyckoff. Jim, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Hey, Rick. I just wanted to make a quick comment about the men's national team.
Yes.
And the inability to produce national players. I actually don't think it's a high school issue. I think that being a coach myself, the level of coaching from a young age in this country has got drastically better over the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
The issue you have is that in other countries, you effectively have professional athletes at the age of 16 or 17 years old. So they have nothing to do with high school. They're with a professional organization. They are playing in academies and getting the very best coaching that, that money can buy. And they are signed to that club. They will perhaps earn a minimum wage to start with, but they are effectively the property of that club. And the whole concept of high school and college for soccer just does not... What you end up happening is the reason why the U.S. team doesn't have any young players is that they're not playing international football until they're 24, 25. And quite frankly, as a soccer player, if that's kind of your peak years.
Well, Jim, and let me stop there because I'm up against the clock, and I thank you for your call. And I agree with you that that's certainly the issue is, at least here in the States, as I mentioned before, in other countries around the world, they don't have to deal with overcoming the legacy of a kid coming up to the ranks and wanting to play high school sports, high school soccer. That doesn't happen in other countries. Here it does, and which is a problem because a kid doesn't want to do that. They want to go away from their high school team where they're a big star. That is a concern. I'm not sure how we get around that. But for soccer players, I mean, like the Pulisic kid who obviously grew up in Pennsylvania, he eventually signed to go play in Germany when he was like, 16 or 17, because he realized to get to the next level, he had to go play in better competition. All right, we're talking obviously about what happened, what's going on here with youth soccer, amateur soccer, travel soccer in the States. How come we're not producing more players of great magnitude? And what does it say about our soccer program in this country? 1-877-337-6666 is our number. Let me take a break. Dave Uram has your update. When I come back, I'll go right back to the calls. Back here on the Sports Edge, we're talking this morning about what's wrong with men's soccer in this country. And I'm really focusing in particular on the youth and amateur level, and perhaps that's where all the problems are really emanating from. And I'm taking your calls at 1-877-337-6666. So far, we've established the fact that, the problem here, one of the major problems here in the country is that we do have a long history of high school varsity sports, and particularly with soccer. And unlike other countries around the world who obviously compete and compete well in the World Cup, they don't have that sort of obstacle. They don't have high school soccer in European countries or in South American countries. If you're good in soccer, you automatically begin to play in an outside club team when you're very young, and you continue to progress in that club team if you have the talent. It has nothing to do with your education. It has to do with just being on that outside club team. Here in the States, it's a lot more complicated. I would think that's something that, in particular, that if I'm running the United States soccer development, I'm thinking that's one issue we really have to sort of straighten out. Anyhow, let's get back to your calls. Let's go to Drew in Howell. Drew, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Drool, right? How
yeah,
are you?
Drool. That's a good one. Yes, Drew.
No, I don't do that. I don't. You know, I just wanted to get a few seconds. You know, when I watched soccer in this country, I watched in the 70s, I watched the Erdogan family go out and get every top soccer player and put them in a uniform, and that uniform was the New York Cosmos. They had a coach named Hennis Weisweiler,
right?
And he made it work. Now, you just said before you went to the break, you talked about how other countries don't really deal with this sort of problem as they pick their kids and they cherry pick.
Yes.
And then these kids are given educations, they go to academies and whatnot. You know, every soccer field in this country, on this day as we speak, is filled with parents making with expenses and kids with uniforms. And all these kids are good in their own right, but only 1% of those kids, maybe even less than that, is going to go on to a bigger deal. Couldn't the United States Soccer Federation put together a couple of academies, just like the Yankees and Casey Stengel did, where they had scouts in every small one-light town, and they got these great kids? This breaks my heart because the U.S. qualifying for the World Cup was, not a given, but we were always in the running. And to have this done and to have this fall apart like this, and then to have it fall apart at the top with Beckenbauer and Arena falling apart, this really breaks my heart. But why can't the U.S. Soccer Federation just start something that takes the top 0.5% of these kids, put them in the academy you're talking about, put you at the head and make you the president of it, and just start developing kids and give them an education and give them something to look forward to, because there's no pro leagues after all those, you know, soccer doesn't rival the NFL on Sunday afternoon. It doesn't rival the NBA or hockey. But
Drew, let me just say this. All these other
countries have such great programs, and we struggle. But have a great day. Thanks for taking my call. Take care.
Drew, thank you. And I will say that, and in fact, going back to the 70s, which Drew was talking about with the Cosmos, yeah, I mean, they used to pack them in at the old Giants Stadium, and then you had players like Beckenbauer and Giorgio Canaia and Stevie Hunt and Pele and those guys. But the fact is, they weren't American soccer players. They were all imports, and they were great stars in their own respective countries. That's why people went to watch the games, because they were fans of international soccer. But there were no Americans, really, by and large, on the Cosmos. It was all international players. But Drew's point is well taken, that we still haven't figured this out yet in terms of the leadership of the U.S. Soccer Federation. You know, for example, I mentioned before, like, you know, when the kids play in Europe at young ages, they don't pay to play in a club team necessarily. The club team is paying them to come and to play for them. And that's a little different kind of mindset, because obviously it runs counter here in this country about being an amateur or professional. But again, we have to work through all these issues. And the good news, it is, seems to me, is the fact that we are the United States. We do a lot of financial resources, and we just need to get this all sort of figured out and basically to isolate the issues in a form so that we don't have basically thousands of travel teams trying to figure out who's in charge, who's running the show, who's more important. I mean, we got to get this figured out. And that's one of the reasons why I think we still see so much, you know, problems and basically having run into obstacles as we get to compete at the elite level. Let's move on. Let's go up to New Haven, and John is standing by. Hi, John. You're on the Fan.
How you doing, Rick?
Good, John.
My son plays youth soccer. He's been playing since he was three. He's only five now. And I think one of the issues, it's not really a problem, is just that Americans have more choices. Like my son, on Saturdays when we leave soccer, I take him right to hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And in the fall, he plays hockey. Spring, he plays soccer. He's going to start baseball. And I think in soccer in Europe, by the time they're five, they already know that these kids are going to be good. And they don't have the choices that we have. And in America, by the time the kids pick a sport that they really are good at and they want to play, they're freshmen in high school, and it's too late. These kids in Europe, like you said, they're already signed by the time in America these kids pick the one sport they want to play.
Well, you know, John, I thought, you know, maybe a generation or so ago I would have agreed with that, but, you know, let's face it, in Europe and in South America and other places around the world, you know, the sports the kids can choose to play, whether it's hockey or soccer or basketball or other sports, field hockey, they all do the same thing our kids do. They sort of migrate to those sports that they – I mean, in other words, they try a lot of sports when they're kids, when they're five or six or seven, but then they eventually migrate and find the sport they particularly excel in. So I don't think that's the real concern here, because I do think – because I've talked to enough kids who grew up in Europe – that they said, well, yeah, we didn't specialize just in soccer. Soccer was always present because soccer is sort of like a universal language for Europeans. But the fact is that they played a variety of sports as well. So I don't think that's the real concern. But who knows? John, thank you for the call. Let's move on. Let's go to Taylor at Long Island. Taylor, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Hi, Rick. First time, long time. I think I would argue that we do have a successful youth soccer program, because the women seem to win very, very often.
Correct.
And maybe this is an opportunity to take 5 years to put all the American energy behind the very successful women's teams.
Well, Taylor, I will tell you, you notice all morning I've been very careful to talk about the U.S. men's team, because clearly the women's program has been successful. As to why that has happened, I don't know why there's a difference between the success the women's programs have had as opposed to the men's, but clearly they have been successful. I think, Taylor, we lost the connection, but thank you for pointing it out. Let's move on. Let's go to Damianis in Huntington.
Hey, Rick, it's Damianis, yes.
Yes. Go ahead.
Listen, I have an international soccer academy in Smithtown for the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've been talking soccer, but most of the let's say 99% of the population there, they have no idea. They have no idea about the sport.
Okay.
And the problem is this: no matter how much talent we have in this country, we can't develop it the way that we want to develop it because it's the parent that is involved wants to be the manager, and he thinks already has a professional soccer player in his hands, and he's managing a 10-year-old, a 9-year-old, a 12-year-old as a professional soccer player. Before even the kid can kick the ball, these guys are negotiating. They're living from one team to go to the next, to the next, to the next, thinking that playing with the better players makes their son better. They are not following the structure. They are not following the fundamentals. They are not learning to soccer the right way. Their goal is to win, and they will go to any team that is winning versus the bad teams. And they think that's the right way to go about it. Now, go back to the national team. We will never have a national team equal with any other standards in Europe or Latin America because the level of the competition in this country, in MLS and anywhere else, is a 4, 5, 6 division in any other country. I always joke and I say I want to go to Flushing Meadows Park. I want to pick up 11 strangers and go and beat the Red Bulls. I want to go and beat the NYFC. The reason I'm doing that and I'm joking about it is because there is nothing. You get a college kid and you have 6, 7 college kids playing in your MLS team. What is your team is all about? It's a college day team.
So let me just back up for a second on this.
Yes.
You just said a few minutes ago, I believe, that you feel that one of the major concerns in this country is that so many of the parents are so preoccupied with their kid being on a better team or winning and better competition, as opposed to just basically having real more focus on having the kids
fundamentals.
I haven't heard that before. Is that your feeling that we forget so much to playing on an elite travel team?
It's no feeling, Rick. I'm on my life for 50 years in soccer.
Right.
I'm teaching soccer the last 15 years. Okay?
Yep.
The kids that went through my academy, they play throughout. They're the best in the varsity games. They're the best in this, best or that. But what does that mean? I have an example. I'll give you this example. One kid that I know very well from the Como area went to Chievo in Italy. They opened the door for him to try out for the professional team.
Right.
2 weeks later, he returned back. You know why? Because his girlfriend was here, he had a car, he had a beautiful life, and he couldn't take to sacrifice anything. He had no heart. He had no goal. It wasn't his idea to go to Chievo to try out. It was probably his parents or somebody else, his coach there, and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
He got the door open. Come to Chievo. We'll pay 2 weeks for you to try out. The Italian kids were making fun of him because he's in America. America. But he didn't stick it out. They don't have the heart. Even if we have the talent and we open the door,
well,
you don't want to go through it.
Nobody's
going to help you.
No, I hear you. Interesting perspective, to be sure. Hey, thank you for the call this morning. We're getting lots of thoughts and comments about this as to why things aren't working according to, the overall plans. I mean, by now we would have thought that the U.S. men's national soccer team would not just be good, but they'd be one of the elite programs in the world. Obviously, playing for the World Cup, championships, and here we are looking at a situation where they didn't qualify to get in, and it's going to be 5 years before they have a shot to get back and compete. Something's wrong here. Something's wrong with what's happening with our youth programs and the way we're developing soccer players. As I mentioned, earlier on the show, I know some people say, well, we're still not getting the best athletes here in the States to play soccer, as they are, let's say, in Spain or in Italy or in Brazil or someplace. Yeah, but, we get a lot of really good athletes in this country. We do have a lot of great facilities. We do have a lot of smart people involved in soccer. Why isn't it working? And again, I think we begin to pinpoint some of the reasons why that, you know, as the last caller mentioned, you know, maybe we don't spend enough time working on basic fundamentals in this country with soccer, that we're so involved and so focused, particularly from the parental perspective, on just competing, getting our kid to a higher level and winning. Maybe we're missing the boat in terms of fundamentals and teaching them and really drilling them in. Or maybe it's because of the fact that the high school programs still are very attractive to our kids. We got to figure out a way to sort of mesh the high school teams with the travel teams. Maybe that's the key. But again, right now we're just sort of going sort of like nowhere. We're just sort of lost in this this sort of miasma of not knowing what works and what doesn't work. And that's a real concern. All right, let me take a timeout. When I return, I'll go right back to your calls. Hey, don't forget, at 9 o'clock this morning, it is Football Sunday here on The Fan with Mark Melusis and Dave Deal. And as always, I ask you to check out my web.
Hey, everyone. Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us, and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.